ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
Welcome to ISKCON of Silicon Valley. Very pleased to have you all here today. And thanks to everyone who's joined us online to the world. Tonight we'll be discussing Krishna's teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, in which he gives us philosophical and very commonsensical advice. And before we begin tonight, I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you, because you are Vaishnavas, and therefore you are the most worshipable within the three worlds. Hare Krishna. Om Tat Sat. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us, Vyavasayatmika Buddhir, please find the verse. Ekeha Kurunandana, Bahu Shaka Hyanantascha Buddhayo Vyavasayinam. 2:41. This verse has a lot to do with one's state of consciousness, which is really the whole point of Krishna consciousness, is to refine one's consciousness. And here, Krishna starts the verse with the words vyavasayatmika, which means resolute in Krishna consciousness. Someone will look up the word resolute. And buddhi. Buddhi means the intellect or the intelligence. So one of the signs of an advanced human is that he or she is able to discriminate and understand what is to be done and what is not to be done. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those who are affected by lower modalities in the world don't know what's to be done or what's not to be done. Whereas those who have a more refined intellect understand what is to be done. And this means vyavasayatmika buddhi. Resolute means?
Resolute means admirably purposeful, determined, and unwavering.
Ooh, say it again. It's really nice.
Admirably purposeful, determined.
Okay, so two words at a time. Admirably purposeful. Everyone say.
Admirably.
Have you ever met anyone who's admiredly purposeful? It's a nice phrase, isn't it? You admire them because they're so purposeful in what they're doing. And the second part?
Determined and unwavering.
Determined and unwavering. I mean, wouldn't you like to see that on your, gravestone? that the person was admirably resolute or purposeful and determined.
And unwavering.
And unwavering. This is what resolute means, to be resolute in Krishna consciousness. Admirably purposeful, determined. And here we are, vyavasayatmika buddhi. So the buddhi, or the actual intelligence. Now we can notice that we have an intellect just by noticing that we're being informed by our intellect. Prabhupada describes it in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam as an experience like a parent teaching a child. The parent is a well-wisher of the child, hopefully, and is giving good instructions in order to help the child move forward in life. And similarly, we can notice, if we're a little introspective, that we get intelligence all the time. Have you ever heard of the still voice within? Or have you ever noticed that you have a conscience? The concept of having a conscience, what does it mean to you, Bharat? That idea of conscience. Not consciousness, but having a conscience. Yeah, go ahead.
If you have a conscience, and it's like in the back of your mind, you already know whether something's like morally right or wrong.
Right, and have you ever been in a situation where that little voice was telling you, do it? And then you followed and did it, or it said do it, or don't do it even, and then you did it anyway. Have you? I'm just asking. Okay. So, and you might notice that there's kind of a struggle that goes on when you you notice. Where does that conscience come from? This is explained that by Prabhupada, that there's a super spirit. Within each body, there's actually two souls. And there's the Atma and the Paramatma. And the Upanishads, particularly the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, describes how there's one tree, but there's two birds in the tree. The two birds represent the two souls. One soul is described as being the eating bird. It's trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree. And the other bird is the witnessing bird. So the witnessing bird is the Paramatma, or the supreme soul, who doesn't need to interact with the material world, doesn't need to eat the fruits of the material world, but is merely a friend of the eating bird and is simply observing. And not only that, Krishna describes in many places that he's the one who's the order, the desire fulfiller. For instance, in the Shrish Upanishad, we hear how Krishna has been fulfilling the desires of every living entity since the time immemorial. Pundits, quote the verse.
Saparyaga chukram akhayam avranam ashnaviram shuddham apapavidham kavir manishi paribhu svayambhur yatatat yato ritan vyadadach chashvati bhya samabhyaha.
So which part of that means that he, the super soul, has been fulfilling everyone's desires since the time immemorial?
Ritan vyadadach chashvati bhya samabhyaha.
Okay.
The last few words.
Can you break it down word for word?
I'm not. I don't know.
Okay. We'll get back to you in a second. So there is a way in which we have a conscience and we have a relationship with Krishna that we can be aware of even as we're moving about this world. It's not that God's very far away. In fact, the Ishapanishad says God is far away, but he's very near as well. You say the verse.
The verse
I just mentioned. Shri Upanishad, call a friend. Tadejati tadnajati.
Tadejati tadejati tadnajati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya sabhyartha.
Which means?
Krishna walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. Like,
he's within everything?
And
he's outside of everything.
Yeah.
So there it is. He's far away, but he's very near as well. He's there within the heart. So one with Vyavasaya Bhikarabhuti has become very much aware of Krishna's presence and notices that he or she has a conscience, and it's coming from the friend, Krishna, within the heart. The more that one aligns one's will resolutely with Krishna's instruction and from within and without, the more that one becomes aware of the voice of Krishna from within and actually hears him speaking. There is a way in which I can ignore the voice of Krishna and he will oblige me by helping me to forget, and I'll become desensitized to his voice. Certain kinds of lifestyle I might live in which I'm not able to actually hear Krishna's voice, or if I just ignore Krishna altogether and do whatever I please and don't listen to his voice, then he might help me to forget him. Who can substantiate that line of thinking with a verse from the Bhagavad Gita? That is, that he would help me to forget him. Go ahead, Sundar. Somebody pass him a mic. We need several more microphones flowing out here.
I was thinking about this verse. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mata smritir gyanam apohanam cha vedesya sarvairahameha vedya vedantakrat vedaviteva chaham. So wherein Lord Krishna says that I am seated in the heart of all the living entities, and from me comes remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge.
Yeah, Krishna says this in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. First of all, he says, there is situated within the heart. Mattak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. He says, I'm the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So he can oblige us if we want to forget. But if you want to become actually aware of Krishna, this is called Buddhi Yoga, aware of Krishna speaking to you from within and from without, then if you turn your attention towards him to listen to his message and to become aware of how he's speaking to you, he'll make himself more and more apparent in your life and you'll be able to hear his voice. And this is what is called Buddhi Yoga. So aligning oneself with God's intentions is a good idea because he always wins. And if I have my own intentions, then I always lose. Yes.
Does he always like speak to you, or he speaks to you through signals or through?
Like, what do you think? How does he speak to you?
Well, I've always seen that sometimes I see signs.
You see signs.
Signals.
Yes.
That maybe I'm supposed to do something.
Yes.
Or sometimes I feel like Krishna talks through people.
Yes.
So is that? But I just wanted to confirm that that's.
Yeah, actually, Krishna. Krishna is everywhere and within everything and within every living being. So he can inform us or warn us or chastise us from any direction. So yes, there's a way in which devotees become aware of Krishna's presence in all kinds of activities. I mean, it's explained in the Bhagavatam that a person who is surrendered to the idea that the real purpose in life is to serve Krishna and to be in line with his will, take the lesson from everything that happens to them. That means they're being taught. So the material nature speaks to us. So the verse, Te anukampam susumikshamano bunjane evatmakritam vipakam, gives the spirit that whatever happens to me, even adversities that come, I take the lesson from that. It means I'm being taught something. In fact, the material world is set up in such a way as to teach me how to develop compassion and how my best interest in life is really being in alignment with Krishna and his desires. Because if I go outside that and I perform activities that are contrary to his will, then it's like hitting the guardrail. Or worse. And you know those on the freeway, they have those little bumps? Because you're not paying attention, and all of a sudden you go, boom, 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 boom. So if you're not paying attention in your life, also, Krishna has signals that he can send you that you're hitting a bumpy road, and that pay attention. And put your eyes back on your practice. And, you know, sometimes he chastises. Chastise comes from the word chaste or chasten. And Prabhupada mentions in the in a very charming and enlivening Bhagavatam commentary that he writes about remaining in chaste consciousness. This means that our original consciousness is pure, and purity means that I'm situated in the service mode for Krishna. As the devotee always maintains that, rather than being profaned by the enjoying spirit that I'll enjoy separately from Krishna, which is the cause of all my problems. So devotee is very careful to remain in chaste consciousness. So if somehow I stray, then I'm chastised, which is meant to bring me back to chastity of focus on Krishna, which is really what this verse is talking about. Vyavasayatmika bhuti. It means I'm really giving my sincere effort to be in alignment with Krishna's will, with his teachings. My buddhi, my intelligence, is very resolute in that way. Yes.
Maharaj, I was also thinking about the verse in the seventh chapter where Krishna says that as soon as one starts to develop faith in the demigod, then I strengthen that faith. And the reason is that he wants to enjoy material life, so he lets him do that.
Yeah. Is that yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktam shari architum ichati tasya tasya chalam shadham tam eva vidham yaham. So I'd say a little more. You can put that verse up. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shari architum ichati. And that is around verse number 721. Yeah, it's 21. So explain a little more why you chose this verse. Let's see the English. I'm in everyone's heart as a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod and make his face steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Just explain it, why you picked that.
Because in the purport, Prabhupada is saying that if one starts to develop to worship a demigod, which is always for the intention of material enjoyment, so he lets them do that. And so when we start doing material enjoyment, by default, we will forget Krishna. Like that.
Yeah, he's the one facilitating, and even as you try to worship separately from Krishna for some material desire, he's the one who facilitates by making your face steady. And the demigod's not independent from Krishna either. And so even as the demigod fulfills your desire, that's coming from Krishna's sanction and energy as well. Yeah, thank you. Excellent. Okay, so back to Vyavasayatmika Bhuti. It's important. Vyavasayatmika Bhuti means resolute. Your intelligence is resolute in Krishna consciousness. And as we know, at the end of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what does he say? No, the last verse. Evam buddhi param budva samstabhyatmanam atmanam jahi shatram abaho kamarupam durasadam. He had been describing in that chapter how we may be challenged by the urges of the senses in this world. Possible? Yeah, in fact, it's described in various ways throughout the Bhakti Shastras that we're kind of enslaved by the senses. The mind and the senses enslave us when they're out of control. Because they demand many things according to their own liking because of the modes of nature I've acquired. And now I'm forced to do it. I would like to concentrate and sit here and chant, but my mind asked me to do something else. And what do I have to do? Obey it? It's pretty hard not to, though, right? The senses have their own demands. Does anybody ever get hungry? Do you just give in and feed yourself? Yes. When you fast on a fast day, do you notice that there's a little rebellion going on? Everyone's saying, like, come on. You mean you're kidding me, right? We're really not going to eat for one whole day? You know, there's this conflict that goes on. The senses are very strong, actually, and they're pulling in various directions. So Krishna says that gradually you have to develop some spiritual strength. Of course, no one's advocating not eating. But there's a way of regulating the senses in devotional service so that one can actually develop this buddhi yoga and be much more in tune with Krishna's desire and with the transcendental vibration rather than always being absorbed in the lower senses. So Krishna says, evam buddhi param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana. Let's look at that last verse of the third chapter. That'd be 343. That's an action-packed chapter, isn't it? Evam thus buddhe, to intelligence param, superior buddhva, knowing. Again, this word buddhi is coming up again and again, right? Of course, because we're selecting verses. Samstabhya, by steadying atmanam, the mind. Steady the mind. Atmana, by deliberate intelligence. This is very similar to the concept, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. It's very deliberate. That was part of what it means to be resolute. Jahi, conquer. So you have to conquer the mind. Don't let it push you around. Shatrum, the enemy. The enemy is lust. That means, as Krishna described kama earlier, and he will hear kama rupam in the form of lust, durasadam, which is extremely formidable and which is very demanding. And is actually, as if you grab the 11th canto, please, somebody knows what they're doing, grab the 11th canto and get I think it's the 8th verse in the Song of the Avanti Brahmana. You're in for a shock when you hear this verse. So if you came for a nice peaceful evening, and you want to be shanti, then cover your ears for a minute, because when you hear this, you may freak out. So in the Avanti Brahmana section, Krishna describes how the mind, which is the ruler of the senses, the living entity has been under the control of that mind and senses since the time immemorial. And the mind has fearsome, godlike powers. It's in the first section. It could be first through fourth or first through eighth verse. What is it? 11, 23, 47. Well, I was only off by 40 verses. Let's see. Yeah. Manovashe nye hyabhavam smadeva. So the mind, of the mind, vashe, under control, anye, others. He, indeed, abhavam, thank you, have become sma in the past, deva, senses represented by their presiding deities. So let's look at the translation first. You ready? I'm not convinced that you are.
Yes.
Because I warned you about this verse, so I'm going to read it to you. And nobody left the room, so I'm assuming that you can handle such things. Right?
Yes.
That's why you came here. All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial, and the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. He is stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of all the senses. Yes. So this is the power of the mind. Life after life, Krishna is describing in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the mind, by force of varied consciousness, he says, the mind becomes what's called karmatmaka. That's Rishabhadev. He says, karmatmaka yena sharira bandha. Because my mind is colored by the lower modes of material nature. It's like, have you ever done a wash with all white and somebody threw a red gumsha in there? I mean, that's pretty extreme, but everything, all the white stuff turns pink, and it'll never go back. Of course, with your consciousness, it can go back again, but once you come in contact with the material atmosphere, with the idea of enjoying the material world, karmatmaka yena sharira bandha, then you get attached to a kind of a material situation. You get a material body colored by the lower modes of material nature. So Krishna says this is a very dangerous situation to have colored consciousness. And he says, antakali chamameva smaran mukva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nasyati shamshayaha. And that is that when you quit the body, or whatever you think of when you leave, antakali, that means at the end of the body, chamameva smaran mukta kalevaram, when you leave the body, that's what you're going to attain when you leave the body. Yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram. Who knows this verse? I say it a lot before prashanam. Yam yam vapi. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram. Who wants to say it? Tam tam ivaitikonteya. Go ahead.
Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram tam tam ivaitikonteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha.
Give us an idea of what it means.
O son of Pritha, whatever state of mind you are in before the time of death, you will attain that body in your next life.
Yeah, that whatever your consciousness is colored with, that bhavam that you have, that actually Prabhupada describes it, whatever subject matter attracts the attention of the dying person. And that's because of your the way in which you've cultivated your consciousness throughout your life. That's what you'll attain in your next life. There's a composite because of all the vrittis that you've taken in throughout a whole lifetime. And by the force of that, the consciousness is shaped in a certain way, and material nature accommodates. It says, here's what you get. Shotram chakshu sparshanam cha Rasanam granam evacha adishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. Based around the mind, the sutra that you get a certain set of senses. You get eyes, nose, free of cost, all thrown in. And it's all developed according to the way you've developed your consciousness. So all the senses have been under the control of this mind since a time immemorial. That means transmigration is taking place from one body to the next over and over and over again. There's 8,400,000 species of life to accommodate the various combinations and permutations of consciousness of a living being. And of course, as you've noticed, even within each species, there are variations too. So that adds an exponential number of combinations and permutations you can have within the modes of material nature. So, the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. He's ruling everything, the mind. He's stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of all the senses. So this is the first rule in yoga, is you have to bring the mind under control. And as Krishna puts it in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the mind has to become the friend and not the enemy. When the mind is the enemy, it pulls us into activities that are not for our benefit. And when it becomes our friend, then it's in cooperation with Krishna. And this is called Buddhi Yoga. The mind cooperates and encourages us. Follow Krishna, serve Krishna. Bolo Krishna, Bajo Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shiksha. That's the mind singing to us in all the senses. Just feel free to engage in service. Then such a person is a liberated soul, even while living in the body. Iha yasya harir dasye karmana manasa gira nikila apyavastasu jivan mukta su uchite. The jivan mukta person who's living in the material body has a mind, has senses, everything moving about Silicon Valley, but such a person has made the mind the friend and is in tune with Krishna's desire through Buddhi Yoga, then that person is liberated even while living in a material body. Okay, so back to Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. We didn't even explore this one fully, but let's do that for a second. Evam Buddhi Param Budva. So, by steadying the mind, by deliberate spiritual intelligence, and this is what Prabhupada describes in the purport, deliberate spiritual intelligence, also known as DSI, then one should conquer the lower self by the higher self. And here's the purport. The third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and mind, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. That's a really poetical and information-packed sentence, so I'll just say it one more time and you can give a few reflections on it. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, semicolon, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and mind, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. Who would like to make a comment about that last sentence? It's a super sentence, divided with a semicolon. Yes, Radhakrupa.
I think that The study intelligence is the key here to remain focused in that even we understand that it's difficult, but if we keep on trying with the study, using our intelligence in a study manner rather than stopping and not stopping, keep on doing it, then hopefully we would be able to make a progress in spiritual life. That's
yes, this is a good point. This is what Krishna calls abhyas. And he mentions it in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the context of developing the mind so that it's a friend. Because he says, abhyasa yoga yuktena chittasa nanyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati partanu chintayat. And that means that one should again and again practice the tenets of bhakti by fixing the mind on Krishna, especially through hearing and chanting. And in that way, one can gradually develop oneself. So we're directed in our life mainly by our habits, because there's a way in which we rely on our habits to carry us forward, because we are creatures of habit, as has been said before, and we generally get on some kind of a continuum, or we develop momentum, and then we keep doing what we're doing. So once you develop bad habits, that can carry you along for how long? How long can you stay fixed in bad habits? How long? Forever? Yeah, until you somehow break the cycle. And good habits? Which is harder, to fall into a bad habit or to develop a good habit? I'm not sure what you said. Which is harder, to start a good habit or fall into a bad habit?
Start.
You're all saying something different.
Start a good habit.
I mean, in the long run, it's easier to start a good habit, but it's easier just to not pay attention and to fall into bad habits, isn't it? I mean, isn't it more likely by default that you would develop, you know, just like by default, develop good habits, do you? Because if you do, I'm moving in with you. So, you know, generally we just by degrees, you know, go off into bad habits and then find out, oh my goodness, what happened here? So it's a very deliberate idea, abhyasa yoga yuktena. You have to be very careful about maintaining good habits, because once you develop the habit, it can carry you along for a long, long time. And really, our life is made up of a series of various kinds of habits. And if you have bad habits, it'll carry you to a bad direction. That's pretty simple. Yes?
I was just thinking, this half a sentence, Prabhupada put so much information that a book can be written on that. So the point that I was thinking about, he's talking about identity. So in our company, when they develop a website or something, the first thing they talk about is identity. Are you a partner, or you're a reseller, or you're a customer? So many identities are there. So like that, Prabhupada is talking about identity as my body, am I soul, like what is my identity? And then he's talking about, as a soul, what is your pure identity? So how this knowledge is acquired through intelligence, and from that platform, once we identify who we are and we use our intelligence towards that identity of being the servant of Krishna, I think that's when we can control the mind and attain the steadiness.
Well done. Thank you for explaining that. And it brought to my mind a phrase that Prabhupada uses in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. If you'll look this up, please, look up the two words together, Vedic intelligence. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hey, got it? 2:35. If you can turn right to it. What's wrong with just putting the words in? The Vedabase will do that, right? Online? 2:2. It's in the purport, but it'll go right to the combination of words? 2235. 2235, which is a verse anyway that you should write down. If you get a tattoo on the way home tonight, put that on your arm. 2235. Yeah. Anyway, this verse is really important, and so is the purport. And if you go back down to which part? Last paragraph it is, okay? And there's a lot of paragraphs in this purport. Oh, there it is. So far as common sense is concerned, he starts this last paragraph, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super spirit. Now, if we go to the Bhagavad Gita, or the Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit, and the super spirit, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I just wanted to bring your attention to this phraseology where Prabhupada says, the Vedic intelligence. How does that strike you? It's very convenient that we have the Vedic intelligence through the Bhagavad Gita, because, Pramay, how long does it take you to read the whole Bhagavad Gita? Not long, right? I heard Prabhupada say the other day, Krishna spoke it in a half an hour. So, anyway, it's only 700 verses, and it's a brief conversation that took place. That's the Vedic intelligence consolidated into one place. And one of the ways in which to develop this kind of strength of mind and deliberate spiritual intelligence is to consult the Vedic intelligence, otherwise known as Bhagavad Gita. This is a treasure. To be able to go in and hear the speech of Krishna, it's the Vedic intelligence. It develops. And if you put your intelligence in alignment with the Vedic intelligence, then you have this result called Buddhi Yoga. So back to Evam Buddhi Param Buddhva. Is that where we were? We started on the purport, right? So, yeah, thank you. Yeah. This is the sum and substance of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by so-called practice of yogic postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. And this means the Vedic intelligence. It means from Shastra. So if you're getting Shastra and you're hearing from those who have digested Shastra and realized it, Vigyan, and can explain it to you in practical ways, and you hear it regularly, then your intelligence also starts to form in the proper way, which is Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Please go back to that verse. There it is, 241. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana bahushaka. So when you don't have it, so there's a contrast in this verse. When you don't have this buddhi yoga or resoluteness in your intelligence, developed by practice, by association, by hearing from the Vedic intelligence, then what do you get? Bahushaka. He ananta. So ananta means unlimited, and bahushaka means branched, mini branch. So unlimited branches of ideas come out, and you can go in any direction, and at any time you can be attracted to a new idea, a new philosophy, a new sense object. And the implication here is that you'll be pulled in many different directions. And you'll have distracted intelligence, not deliberate spiritual intelligence. Avyavasayinam, for those who are not in Krishna consciousness, this is the fate. So the buddhi has to be developed through the process of Krishna consciousness. Okay, now look at the verse in purport. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport, a strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 22:62 states, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe Sudra Danishchai Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family, traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruit of activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. Is everyone listening carefully? Okay, one person. Thank you, Natalie. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sarmahatma Sudulabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva Krishna is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well-versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers for the spiritual master as follows. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi, dhyayan stuvams tasya yashastri sandhyam, vande guru shri charanaravindam. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically but practically. When there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruit of activities, one who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of acts. I think I threw the rhythm off on the last sentence, so I'm going to read it again. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically, when there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruit of activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruit of acts. And now we'll just take a few questions. Yes.
It seems almost impossible, Prabhu, because I feel that the mind is, from the Bhagavatam verse we read, it's so strong and so powerful.
Where's my, get the verse from Devahuti, where she tells Kapila Dev that it seems impossible. He advises that you should hear for a long time, Shraddha, if you can find it quickly.
But I feel that my practices are like so very little. But it's the power of the mind is like Everest.
And what do you mean by little?
I I mean, like it's so small.
What do you mean by small?
Means like exactly what Prabhupada said here, because my mind is still in fruitive activities, which means whatever I do is not doing that exact thing of not being interested in material things and naturally wanting to do devotional
service. Yeah, well, that's one thing. That's about being distracted. But you said your devotional service is little, small. What do you mean by little or small devotional service?
I mean little or small based on not the amount of time I spend, but it's just the quality of my activities that I do.
Well, that's a good sign, because anyone who thinks I'm doing enough devotional service doesn't really have a taste. It's like when you're eating and you say, you know, I'm enough, you're full. But you want to be hungry in Krishna consciousness. That hunger is very important. So if you're feeling that I should be doing more and my devotional service is very small, that's a good sign. And that means you want to increase. And there's also a way in which Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat, that even su-alpam, a tiny little bit of devotional service, is very, very powerful. I think in relationship with the rest of the population of the world, your devotional service wouldn't be considered very small. Just, you know, I'm just saying. But, of course, we should always have that feeling that I want to increase more and more. It'll be effective over a long period of time. Yes.
So there's a verse upstairs which says that if you engage in devotional service at the cost of nationality, at the cost of family and everything else, it's kind of like watering the root of the tree and the water falls in all other aspects of your life. So does that mean that when you're in the perfect state of equilibrium, when you're serving God, everything else that's expected of you automatically falls into place?
People may expect more of you. We've seen that before. Well, you know, when somebody takes to spiritual life, often people who don't have the same context may feel that you're not doing enough materially. Because that's their idea. In the Gita, Krishna says, Yanisha sarvabhutanam, Tasyam jagrati sanyami, yas tasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashto mune. So he gives this comparison. He said a person who's in materialistic consciousness sees the person practicing spiritual life as wasting his time. And the person in spiritual consciousness sees the materialist as you're wasting your time. You know, you could make a little cartoon. So they both have their context. Nonetheless, the idea here is that, you know, someone who's dedicating themselves to Krishna consciousness actually has the wherewithal to do the best good for the most people of the world. So what does it mean to do good for others? Actually, the only ultimate good is to be able to help people advance spiritually, because we're implicated in material nature. And no matter how much material facility you give somebody, that it's not going to ultimately help them, because they'll still be stuck in the material world. Prabhupada would give the example, parent's son runs away from home and gets lost in a big city somewhere in another state. So then he's gone for months at a time, months, and they're all out looking for him, and the boy, he has some amnesia, so he's really stuck. And then a friend of the family happens to be on a business trip in that city, and this boy is at an intersection collecting coins to get a meal just to stay alive. So the friend of the family there is at the red light and looks over and sees, oh, that's my best friend's son. And then the boy comes over to the car, you know, can you give something? So what could he do? It's like, here's $20, or here's $100, here's $500, and then drives off. Or it's like, I know who you are. get in the car. I'm going to take you back to your parents. Which one is reasonable or better, I should say? Obviously, the second one. So there's a way in which a person who's understands the process of Krishna consciousness is fully engaged can help other people align their lives in such a way that they actually come back to their real interest. Whereas if they don't know that, no matter how many material facilities they can scare up for people, they still are not doing ultimate good for them. So that's the point.
Thank you.
You found it? A group effort? Congratulations. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:27-21, and it's a response to something that Devahuti said, and you reminded me of this when you made your point about it seems as if it's very difficult to get out of the material world. If you look at 3:27-17, right? 3:23-57. Okay, I'll put that in. 3:23-57. My Lord, is this Devahuti? Yes. I have been solidly cheated by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For in spite of having obtained your association, which gives liberation from material bondage, I did not seek such liberation. It's kind of the mood of the devotee. It didn't take enough advantage. Now if you fast forward to 3:27-17, Devahuti inquired, my dear Brahmana, speaking to her son, who is? That is correct. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Brahmana, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is there separation possible? See, you know, it seems like it's impossible to get out of, right? Even Devahuti is saying that. So then, as there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. Hence, even though he is the passive performer of all activities, how can there be freedom for the soul as long as material nature acts on him and binds him? Even if the great fear of bondage is avoided by mental speculation and inquiry into the fundamental principles, it may still appear again, since its cause has not ceased. And here's Kapila Dev's answer. The Supreme Personality of God had said, one can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me. By thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction and one will be freed from the contamination of matter. Case closed. So there is a way in which by seriously executing devotional service, you'll come to the point of being freed from the material nature. She'll let you go. And you'll be free to do your devotional service as much as you like eternally. Okay. A couple more questions. Yes.
Earlier there was something that was being said or something in the Bhagavad Gita that said that mentioned spiritual master, and
yes.
And it said that something to the effect where one has to have a spiritual master to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Does that mean that one can make advancement in Krishna consciousness without having a guru, but they make real advancement when they get a guru or a spiritual master?
You could put it like that. You can make some advancement, but there's a point at which when one becomes aware of Krishna's intentions and really wants to be connected with Krishna and move to the next level of practice and devotional service, then tadvijnanartam sagurum eva bigachchet samitpani shrotrim brahmanishtam. The Upanishads and all the Vedic shastras, Srimad Bhagavatam, say that's the time when you become cognizant that I really have to do this. Then it's a great urgency mentioned in the shastra. One should take a spiritual master in order to advance to the next level of in Krishna consciousness and to consummate one's connection with Krishna through that process of initiation. Please bring me the first canto of the Adi Lila, chapter 1. This chapter, Adi 1, the first chapter, which begins with the verse, Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan, Ishan Isha Vatarakan, Taprakasham Satchakti, Krishna Chaitanya Samjakam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters. This is the first verse of the most important Gaudiya Vaishnava literature. Vande Gurun. Gurun is plural, spiritual masters. So there are different kinds of spiritual masters. There's the Vartmana Pradakshaka Guru, which is the one, thank you, the one who shows the path in the first place, that turns one in that direction and says, hey, you should look at this. And next thing you know, you're attracted to Krishna consciousness. Then there are gurus called Shiksha Gurus, those who help you to understand the process of devotional service, how to chant the mantra, and why to chant the mantra, and so forth. And then there's a Diksha Guru. Diksha Guru means one who gives you the mantra. And so then, like the Diksha Guru in the gardening metaphor is like one who plants the seed. The Shiksha Guru is one who helps you water the seed. Which one's more important? Was that a unanimous?
Yes.
Both? Yeah, so there's a great cooperation there. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you look at... if you look at Adi Lila Volume 1, Chapter 1, text number 34, Vande Guru Nisha Bhaktan Isham Isha Vaktarakan Taprakasham Stachat Shakti Krishna Chaitanya Samjakam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord's incarnations, His plenary portions, His energies, and the primeval Lord Himself, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has composed this Sanskrit verse for the beginning of his book, and now he will explain it in detail. He offers his respectful obeisances to the six principles of the Absolute Truth. Gurun is plural in number because anyone who gives spiritual instructions based on the revealed scriptures is accepted as a spiritual master. Although others give help in showing the way to beginners, the guru who first initiates one with the Maha Mantra is to be known as the initiator, and the saints who give instructions for progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness are called instructing spiritual masters. The initiating and instructing spiritual masters are equal and identical manifestations of Krishna, although they have different dealings. Their function is to guide the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami accepted Nityananda Prabhu and the six Goswamis in the category of Guru. Isha Bhaktan refers to the devotees of the Lord like Sri Shivas and all other such followers. Moving to text 35, he says, Mantra Guru Ar Jata Shikha Guru Ghan Tahar Chodana Age Kariya Vandan. I first offer my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of my initiating spiritual master and all my instructing spiritual masters. Is everyone in the mood to hear this?
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty enthusiastic. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his thesis, Bhakti Sandarbha, has stated that uncontaminated devotional service is the objective of pure Vaishnavas, and that one has to execute such service in the association of other devotees. By associating with devotees of Lord Krishna, one develops a sense of Krishna consciousness and thus becomes inclined toward loving service of the Lord. This is the process of approaching the Supreme Lord by gradual appreciation in devotional service. If one desires unalloyed devotional service, one must associate with devotees of Sri Krishna, for by such association only can a conditioned soul achieve a taste for transcendental love and thus revive his eternal relationship with Godhead in a specific manifestation and in terms of the specific mellow rasa that one has eternally inherited in him. If one develops love for Krishna by Krishna conscious activities, one can know the Supreme Absolute Truth, but he who tries to understand God simply by logical arguments will not succeed, nor will he get a taste for unalloyed devotion. The secret is that one must submissively listen to those who know perfectly the science of God, and one must begin the mode of service regulated by the preceptor. A devotee already attracted by the name, form, qualities, etc. of the Supreme Lord may be directed to a specific manner of devotional service. He need not waste time in approaching the Lord through logic. The expert spiritual master knows well how to engage his disciple's energy in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and thus he engages a devotee in a specific devotional service according to his special tendency. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master, because in the scriptures acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There's no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. One should always remember that a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. One who is not properly initiated may present himself as a great devotee, but in fact he is sure to encounter many stumbling blocks on his path of progress towards spiritual realization, with the result that he must continue his term of material existence without relief. Such a helpless person is compared to a ship without a rudder, for such a ship can never reach its destination. It is imperative, therefore, that one accept a spiritual master if he at all desires to gain the favor of the Lord. The service of the spiritual master is essential. If there is no chance to serve the spiritual master directly, a devotee should serve him by remembering his instructions. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. If one thinks that he is above consulting anyone else, including a spiritual master, he is at once an offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. Such an offender can never go back to Godhead. It is imperative that a serious person accept a bona fide spiritual master in terms of the Shastra conjunctions. Sri Jiva Goswami advises that one not accept a spiritual master in terms of hereditary or customary social or ecclesiastical conventions. One should simply try to find a genuinely qualified spiritual master for actual advancement in spiritual understanding. Yes, Prabhu.
So, in the beginning of this paragraph, I think it said that
Just for a little microphone use 101. Microphones, especially these we have in the room, they catch the sound from the top end, not from the side. So it's good when you keep it close, but if you point it towards where the vibration's coming from, like this, you get a much clearer sound.
Okay.
Now try.
It is okay now?
That's 63% better.
Okay. All right, Prabhu. So, in the beginning of the paragraph, it said, if one is not initiated properly, what does that mean?
It just means if you're not initiated, or okay. If you don't follow. This is Tata Diksha Vidanina. This is something that's mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. It says, Yata Kanchanam Yati Kamsam Rasa Vidanata Tata Diksha Vidanina Dvijatvam Jayatendrinam. So this is an example given by Sanatana Goswami. In this verse he says that the process of initiation he compares turning bell metal into gold. And there's an actual alchemical process. Don't ask me what it is. I heard on a morning walk they were all asking Prabhupada, how do you do it? I said, well, it's an ancient process. Actually, yogis used to do it. They would don't try this at home, swallow mercury. And then, you know, there was a way in which when they would pass water, they'd do it on bell metal because of their mystic potency, they'd turn it into gold. Anyway, it's a whole long process. But the example is there nonetheless. This is yata kanchanam yati kamsam rasa vidanata. Tata diksha vidanina. So this word vidanina means when you follow the proper system for diksha. And this is mentioned, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had Sanatana Goswami write the Hari Bhakti Vilas in order to that we could understand what the process of initiation is. So there in the first Vilas, there are various chapters within the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And this is a compilation of all the instructions Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave, and in order that one could follow properly the system that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given, and which refers to all the essential aspects of the scriptures, which describe devotional service, perfectly synthesized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his disciples, or I could say through his disciples, Nana Shastra Vidhar Vichara Naika Nipuno Shaddharma Samstapako. So Vidhanena, the proper system for accepting diksha from a spiritual master, is described there in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. One must approach spiritual master, Adau Guruvashrayam. The first thing is one must take shelter of a Vaishnav. And so taking shelter of a Vaishnav means you're working under somebody who has some spiritual significance. What is their spiritual significance? They took shelter of a Vaishnav. There's a chain in which somebody took shelter of somebody's spiritual significance means that person has not only dedicated their lives, they've taken shelter of the process of devotional service. And as described in the verse I gave earlier, tadvignanartam sa gurum eva bhikachchet sanitpani shotriyam brahmanishtam. Sagurum sa... This verse describes how the person who had been came as a disciple, samitpani. So samitpani means they came holding firewood in their hands. And what does that mean? It means that in Vedic times, the guru would be performing a daily fire ceremony, offering ghee and grains into the fire. And so the disciple wouldn't just come empty-handed, or the person who wanted to take shelter, but would bring some offering. And it represents hard labor. Finding wood in the forest is not such an easy thing. Even Krishna and Sudama got lost in the forest, and their spiritual master had to come find them. So samitpani, shotriyam brahmanishtam, and also shotriyam, they've heard a person who's a spiritual master, on the other side is being described as somebody who's heard sufficiently. They've dedicated their lives, they've tuned their ears to the message that's coming through the parampara, so they've assimilated the knowledge inwardly and outwardly. Shotriyam brahmanishtam, that means assimilation, because they're nishtam, they're fixed in Brahman. They have no other intention in life except to serve Krishna. So in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's described how adau guruvashrayam, one should approach such a person, take shelter. Then swadharma pritsha, one should inquire about the process of devotional service to remove one's doubts. Because doubts are what block us from actually making advancement in devotional service. And if you have a spiritual master, it's like having a parent who's helping to raise you from the time that you're just starting as an infant. And Prabhupada points out in this very book that a spiritual master is like a parent. And if you don't have a parent in your life, you're raised by wolves, then you're going to end up like a little wolf. And you don't want that. You want to be raised by a Vaishnav guru. So that means that you have to have a Vaishnav guru. So you take shelter, you make relevant instructions, and then you take initiation. These are actually, out of the 64 items of devotional service, Rupa Goswami says these are the first three that are important for someone to start the process of devotional service, to take this initiation. Hari Bhaktivilas gives many more instructions based on scripture. As an example, a devotee who is aspiring to take a diksha from a Vaishnava guru should examine that person for at least a year, at least, and or up to 3 years, to be able to say that this person actually removes my doubts, and it's a qualified person. This person knows the Shastra, knows the science of Krishna, and is situated in Brahman. It means they have no other business except for Krishna consciousness. And on the other side, the guru has to examine the disciple. This is an offense to accept somebody as a disciple, someone who's not actually sincere about devotional service. This is also mentioned in the Harinam Chintamani, when Haridas Thakur describes the process of chanting Hare Krishna and says that it's important to accept initiation from a Vaishnava guru and accept the name from that person. And in that way, one can come to the perfection of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Moreover, it's explained in the 7th, 6th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he says anyone can chant the holy name at any time and make advancement. But if you want to come to the perfection of chanting the holy name, you have to take it from a Vaishnava guru. If you don't, he says, you're committing the third offense to the holy name. And he says, then you can go on chanting, and in your next life, you can take a guru, and then you can make further advancement. So this is pointed out in as vidhanena. This is the system which is given in the Shastra itself to accept the bona fide spiritual master. It's actually it's a sign of humility. And you have a local source, somebody who's actually your local parent. It's very heartfelt. It's arranged by the internal potency. And it is absolutely necessary in order to come to the perfectional stage of devotional service, according to all Shastras. Does that help? Something. Okay. Yes. I'm really chewing up the clock here. We got to have some time for kirtan.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I have two questions, and one has kids, small kids. So.
And one is what?
One has small kids, like different questions, follow-up questions. If you read the verse, Yasya Prasad and Bhagavad Prasad, one has to please and one has to satisfy the spiritual master in order to achieve Krishna. I had a question here, which guru is, like, which guru meant by guru, Siksha guru or Diksha guru? But later Prabhupada asked question, it was guru, many gurus, Siksha gurus. So if it is a lot of gurus, how we will satisfy them all, and how we will know it in practice that we satisfied them?
Well, how would you satisfy them all? Really by, you know, your full contribution to devotional service, any Vaishnava will be pleased with you. But more likely, as we see the case, it's very natural to have a guru. It's actually the nature of the living entity to because we're parts and parcels of Krishna, and we're persons, and we're eternally under the shelter of Krishna, to be under the shelter of somebody who's prominent. And when one in devotional service, and when one discerns that through hearing and association, then it's very natural to do that. Which one's most important, Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru? The answer is, the guru that's most important is the one that really occupies your heart the most. That's the most important guru. It's the one who helps you the most, the one who occupies your heart the most. It's not some official thing, although there is an official aspect to it, vidhanina. There's a system of diksha that one accepts a spiritual master, and that may be one Diksha Guru, but the Shiksha Guru can become more prominent. We have examples of that in our own Sampradaya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated by Vipina Vihari Goswami, but he, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was more influenced by his Shiksha Guru, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Became a much more prominent figure in his life. He showed, of course, respect to both of them and honored both of them, but it's obvious that he had more connection spiritually, and they took more it was more influenced by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Yes, so whichever one becomes most prominent is a very natural thing, and it's different for each person.
Thank you. And usually to satisfy a person, you have to get instructions from him, and directly, like, particular instructions, and when you fulfill that, he will be satisfied or dissatisfied. And these days, only a few of us are very close to gurus, like even Shiksha gurus, but many of us are like tiny particles somewhere around, and maybe Shiksha guru or Diksha guru doesn't notice us, so how we get instructions from them and satisfy them?
Well, there are specific instructions and there are general instructions. So you may take either one and they're both absolute. So if you're, as you pointed out, some gurus may have, 50,000 disciples, and so you may not be in there changing the flower vases because you and get a chance to talk to your guru every night because, you're number 40,999 on the list. So what do you do? Actually, you're in the Sangha, and you typically devotees, they still, when they, because it's an internal process, it's not some external thing, devotees will feel inspired by the example. For instance, a Diksha guru, someone that, devotees will put on their altar because they kind of, it's like almost like looking at a deity. Here's my ideal in devotional service. It's almost more important than looking at Krishna. Because the way in which, we're not going to become Krishna, but we are going to try to aspire to become like our spiritual master in mood. And so the spiritual master has a particular mood and method. Even following Srila Prabhupada, there are many different, disciples and followers who are who give diksha, who have different moods and different methods. So if you're in that sangha and you're appreciating the mood of that guru, you can pick up a general instruction. My guru likes me to be the servant of the servant and serve in that mood. And if you pick that up and you become a servitor, you will be noticed. There's no lack of capacity because it's an internal process. It's like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's in the Acharya Leela, he noticed devotees who were seemingly insignificant because he saw their service. I saw it with Prabhupada all the time. There were so many people around Prabhupada, and people would actually, it was a little bit, I didn't have to worry about it too much because I was a small fry, so I just stayed back anyway. But, there was a lot of struggle to get closer to Prabhupada physically. And I saw so many times, like in San Francisco as an example, I had just joined, but Prabhupada was there, and I came in, and I saw, all right, this is as far as I get, they're like, oh, that's it, kitty. But I was observing, and Prabhupada was noticing, it wasn't that, he knew the mood of the devotees around him. For instance, he would pick out people, even that weren't there, and say, oh, where's such and such? Like one night I was there, he said, where's Jayananda? Jayananda wasn't pushing again into the front. In fact, one time when he came in, he was falling asleep in the back because he'd been up all night working on the Roth cart. And, Prabhupada was talking about him, even though he was in the very back of the room. So it's a transcendental process. You have to see for yourself. So in any case, very practically, you can take a general instruction from your guru or from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says, Yari dako tahi kaha krishnu padesh amara gnaya guru hana tara edesh, which means, take this movement seriously and try to spread it. And that's what your guru is doing too, right? So if you take that general instruction of Mahaprabhu and you follow your guru, you're going to be aligned. And if you happen to get a personal instruction from your guru who says, from now on, clean up the temple room. A lot of times these are just suggestions and the devotee takes it as life and soul. Srila Prabhupada's guru, he asked him, he didn't get a lot of association because he was a grihastha, and then, mostly sannyasis were physically close to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Prabhupada wrote a letter, and he took the first instruction that he got from his guru, and he met him in Ultadanga. which is now open in Calcutta. You can go there and see that place where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting, and then Prabhupada was dragged there by his friend, because Prabhupada had seen enough gurus in his life to know that they're all bogus. So his friend said, no, no, this one's different. You got to come. And he dragged him up the stairs. And as soon as Prabhupada saw Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's stature, it was so impressive, he offered his obeisances. And before he even sat up again, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, you should spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, the Western world. You know, use your English to preach it. Because that's the direction he was going. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to build an institution that it would spread it to the West. You know, that was the idea. And that was what Prabhupada immediately picked up. He heard it and he said, that's me. And some instruction may be directly for you. Like you may be in the same room, Guru says, from now on you do this. Or you may just be sitting in the room, you know, the same class, and Guru says this. Like Prabhupada gave an instruction in Hawaii once. He said, everyone should chant at least one chapter of Bhagavatam every day. Baba Tarini tells about this, because she was there in Hawaii, still is. And she said, so Prabhupada said, well, okay, will you do it? And everyone said, yes, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said it again. You should chant at least one chapter of Bhagavatam every day. You'll do it? Yes, Prabhupada. He asked a third time. He said, if you chant a chapter of Bhagavatam every day, then you'll go back to Godhead. Will you do it? And we said, yes, Prabhupada. So Baba Tarini says, so the amazing part was nobody did it. But you could. I mean, you're sitting there, you know, he's talking to everybody. You could pick that instruction up just as much as anybody else and just say, hey, from now on, that's my thing. I always chant a chapter of Bhagavatam every day. Who's going to stop you? Let them try. They can't stop you. You could follow that. You could follow that to your last breath. That's what Prabhupada did. His guru told him, you know, if you ever get money, print books. That's a pretty general kind of thing. And, you know, to his last breath, Prabhupada's sitting there, you know, just before he leaves, and he's dictating books because he said, this is it. I got an instruction. I'm not letting go. So you take the general instruction from Mahaprabhu, a general instruction from your guru that's given to everybody. It's just as good. Or you can take a individual instruction that he tells you every, you know, from now on, I want you to make sure, you know, all the temples clean every day. You could take that. And it's all these things are 100% transcendental and will connect you to your guru.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so we came tonight, all of you came. We came together to hear from the Bhagavad Gita. And as birds fly in the sky as high as they're capable, we flapped our wings and tried to get a little altitude. We did discuss the Gita. We brought in some Srimad Bhagavatam verses. And this is one of the ways in which Prabhupada mentions in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, devotees should come together like scientists who discuss the results of their research. You can just see them, you know, with a tweed jacket and corduroy pants and sitting there talking about their research. And he said, in this way, Krishna's pleased. Krishna's pleased by that when we come together and speak about the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and so forth and exchange various ideas within the context of the philosophy and how to apply it to our lives. So we did that. Coming up very soon is the appearance day of Lord Balaram. I believe that's next Wednesday, if I'm not incorrect. It's a big day. Also, opportunity this Sunday, it's Ekadashi. And then if Balaram's appearance day is coming up, what? Saturday. You got Saturday? I got Sunday. I'm going to Toronto. So that means Janmashtami is coming up soon. That means we'll have 10,000 guests here, no less than 10,000 will come. And it's an opportunity for us to extend our hospitality to people who come here from around Silicon Valley. It's the most fulfilling thing you can do is to go out of your way to facilitate other people coming to the temple. Some of them only come once in a while, once in a year. So our whole community will be ready for that. All of us should be ready to do service. I want to give special thanks to those who take time in the kitchen after programs to scrub the pots, to make them shiny. When you do that, there's a natural way in which your heart becomes clean. Cleaning's actually the best service, at least I like it. I'd like to do it a lot more. Taking time to clean the Lord's pots in the kitchen is extremely edifying. So I have to go to Toronto. There's a worldwide book distribution movement going on, and I'm interested in that. I think it's something I think it's something worthwhile pushing. If you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. And we'd like to do that. We'd like to impose upon the world our idea of what a real balanced society looks like and what actually refined philosophy looks like, too. And we'll do it one at a time if we have to. If you notice the campaigns of various candidates who are running for the Democratic National Party and Kumbh Mela going on, other kinds of offices, you know, they go door to door. They meet people one on one. So we have to do that too. At least Silicon Valley, let's make the whole valley Krishna conscious. Let's do it. You were all born for this, I guarantee you. So let's extend ourselves. If we die trying, no harm. Lord Chaitanya will just pick us right up. But that's the best thing to do. Don't die, you know, just working to fill your bank account. It'll drain out anyway when you're not looking. And but if you work hard for Lord Chaitanya and try to make the whole Silicon Valley, that'll please your guru. That's for sure. I guarantee it. You'll notice that one. So put your heart and soul. Please take care of the devotees. Glorify the cleaners. People cleaning the temple, they know what's what. Those who sweep the floor, clean the Vyasa sign, keep things in order in the book room. If they see something outside in the parking lot, a little scrap of paper, they reach down and pick it up. And Krishna, if in their heart, then reciprocates and says, you know this is my body here. So please clean the temple and glorify those who clean the temple. They should be, we should do a special puja for them, the cleaners. Hare Krishna. I have to leave because I have an early plane to catch. I'm not even half packed yet, so please forgive me for skipping out on you all. My heart's always here with all of you, more than you'll ever know. And please have a wonderful week. I'll see you back here next Wednesday for Balaram's appearance day, Krishna willing. Thank you very much. Vancha kalpadarvishcha kripa sindabeva cha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. And for all those who came here from various places, we're going to now have an artik ceremony. We're going to clear the floor of all the asans, and then the artik will take place, and you can dance to your heart's content. Hare Krishna. After that, there'll be prasadam. Thank you.
These both go out.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.